Counting down to Lean Breeze. Fasten your seatbelts, comrades, or you'd better be holding on to something heavy like a Russian kettlebell, because you're about to enter the Lean Breeze Throwdown Zone. This is Ron Jones and Maggie Daniels, the Lean Breeze, and we are Avengers of Health. Hide the donuts. You're listening to the Lean Breeze radio show at theleanbreeze.com. All right, everyone, I'm here with Maggie Daniels from North Central Michigan College. She's a registered nurse over there in Michigan, and I've been chit-chatting with Maggie for a couple of years now about just inspiring other people to be healthy and eat better, and we had some nice little pre-show chatting yesterday. So welcome to the show, Maggie. You're on the Lean Berets.
Well, thank you very much, Ron. I'm happy to be here. It's a gray, sunless Northern Michigan winter afternoon.
Hey, I think you sent some of that here to Los Angeles, because it's been raining. I think this is about the fifth or sixth straight day of rain. So.
Oh my! Well, at least we have snow.
Yeah.
The ski resorts are loving the cold, frigid air that we've had. They're making lots of snow, so yeah. It's a good thing.
That's good exercise, right?
It's good exercise. I have a PowerPoint presentation that I do occasionally, and it's called If You Can Walk, You Can Snowshoe.
I love snowshoeing, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Snowshoeing is a neglected sport by many people who have worn out their joints from running or skiing too hard or lifting improperly, and snowshoes you can put on wherever you are. You can walk out your door, and it makes quite a good aerobic workout, especially if you use ski poles.
Yeah, I found that out a few years ago, and it's a really easy learning curve. Basically, you put them on, it takes you a few steps not to trip on the other shoe, and you're good to go.
Yeah, and you can go up and down hills. You can go over ice and not worry about falling, which is a very big danger for our elderly senior citizens, especially in the northern climates where we get a lot of ice and snow.
Right.
They have those nice little cleats on the bottom of them, so you don't fall. So it's a perfect winter sport for anybody. So if you can walk, you can snowshoe.
I love that. I love that. I'll be doing some snowshoeing shortly, but with all the snow we're getting out here in California.
Okay. Well, good.
I wanted you to talk today because we have while I'm not a nurse, we had a little bit of some things in common with the collegiate teaching that you're doing and that I used to do. And I used to teach a class called Shape Up that had students from the college, but also had people from the community, many of which were retired. And so my student age ranged from about 18 to 92. And that's kind of what you're doing over there at North Central. So you can give us a little bit of background, what you do, and then we'll get into some things that you're seeing as a nurse and also a health practitioner that are concerning, and what you're doing about it.
Well, I have been in the fitness business since about, I'm going to say the early 80s. I stopped smoking cigarettes.
That's a good story. Yeah.
And I stopped smoking cigarettes because I knew they were very, very bad for me. And I had friends who said, oh, Maggie, you'll never stop. You'll never stop. I was always very active, but I still had that cigarette thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit cold turkey one day, and I didn't tell anybody. And I knew from reading that I was going to have to replace that hand-to-mouth habit that smokers have and replace the nervous energy. So for some reason, I started doing sit-ups. I think it must have been divine intervention or something. I started doing sit-ups, and I started running, and I couldn't run to save my soul. And my lungs hurt, and although I'd been a swimmer all my life, I was never a runner.
Uh-huh.
And I've not had a cigarette since, and I even kept a pack of cigarettes in my refrigerator.
See how,
you know, so it's not impossible to go cold turkey, and you know, the side effects from quitting smoking, you get jittery, you get a little ornery, but within a week's time, 5 days' time, the nicotine is out of your system. And from then on, it's a psychological habit. So I started working out and exercising, and then I got really involved in learning about women's sports, and that led me to I applied for and was awarded a Jazzercise franchise way back when. And so I taught Jazzercise throughout northern Michigan, and which is probably one reason why I have arthritis in my old back, because we had to start out on in church basements, you know, linoleum over cement, and we were didn't know enough not to wear, you know, not to wear shoes. We thought it was pretty cool to go barefoot. So some things we did because we were ignorant, and we're a lot smarter today. But so I started jazzercising, and then I decided I was going to become a personal trainer. So I did that in 1990, and then from there I saw that, you know, I really didn't want to train the people who were the buff and beautiful, because, you know, they can do it on their own. And I started seeing a great need for people with illnesses, diseases, to get exercise. So then I became a certified medical exercise specialist, which allowed me to do fitness programming for people with special medical conditions.
That's great.
And the people came, they came to me from all over everywhere. And so I had a business called Four Seasons Fitness, and I traveled everywhere and drove myself nuts, and, you know, going to Japan and being an independent contractor. Then I decided to go back to school. I have a teaching degree, but my husband urged me to go back to school, and because I was working more and more with the health care facilities around the area, and I didn't know the jargon. I didn't know the medical jargon, and I thought to myself, if I'm going to get these doctors to be on my side and to work with me, I'm going to know how to speak like they do. So I took an anatomy and physiology course. And then from there, I went to nursing school.
Wow, that's you have a great background.
Yes, yeah. And then I got this wonderful job as the director of the Student and Community Resource Center at North Central. And North Central is a small community college, about a little more than 3,000 students, and they built this big, huge building that has three regulation-sized basketball courts, a ninth of a mile walking track around the, above the courts, and then two big fitness rooms. And when I got the job, the florists weren't in, nothing was in, so I had about 3 or 4 months to decide how I wanted to go with this. And I decided to do a program, a fitness a class called physical conditioning, that anybody could come into, and the idea was to get the people and the students in here for two semesters, and then let them go. They would learn, they would become confident in knowing what machines were and how their body reacted to exercise, and knowing, you know, what their pulse should be, et cetera, et cetera,
right,
and then get them out into the community. Well, it's become so popular that everybody wants to stay.
You must be doing something right, huh?
Well, we are. Number one, we are very, very user-friendly. I have a staff that is constantly in touch with the students, and we have, every winter semester we have probably 300 students who are the traditional college students, and we have another 400 community people who would just take the class as an audit. And we have a wonderful thing in Emmett County, at North Central. If one lives in Emmett County and pays taxes in Emmett County, once you turn 60 years old, you don't pay tuition.
Wow,
and
that's
you can
great.
Take any class. So they can do a 4 month semester in this physical conditioning class for about $38.
You've got excellent participation rates considering the size of the school. I thought that was a really remarkable point. You got 3,000 students, and you've got 300 of them in that fitness class. That's a pretty good percentage.
We take very good care of our students. We do a very thorough health assessment. There's a mandatory orientation, and we ask about smoking habits, heart disease in the family, diabetes in the family. We make them tell us what their what medications they're on, and if they have any joint problems, medication problems, they have to speak with me before they can actually go up and work out. So I get an opportunity to speak one-on-one with a lot of people.
That's great.
And I talk about their medications. Many of them are here, you know, they have diabetes, so they're trying to lose weight. They're on insulin, which is a insulin promotes fat fat gain in people because insulin promotes fat going into the cells, which is this kind of a ironic thing. But
right.
So exercise is really crucial, and we have a lot. I have a lot of people who are post cardiac who are here because they've had heart surgery. And so I get an opportunity to talk to them, and they feel comfortable coming into my office anytime. I'll do blood pressures. I'll talk about their diets. I'll talk about joint problems. And they feel taken care of, and we feel like we are taking care of them. And I think that is one reason why we have such good retention in the class.
So this is a good point, because, you know, what we do at the Lean Berets, we kind of follow that a quote that Jack Elaine gave us years ago, which is first inspire, then perspire. So we're trying to inspire people to be physically active and also eat better. We're doing more in the nutrition end with Kevin Rail. But you've got a nice percentage of people at the college and in the community, and they keep coming back over and over and over. So now you've got some great adherence. And I think what I'm getting and what we can share with everyone else is you're making it a lot of fun and you know, very non-intimidating to people.
Right. The orientation puts them through the circuit. We have a 24-station circuit, and so you start with a bike. You start with a warm-up on the track or whatever you want to do, and then hop on a bike, and then after 45 seconds, a light turns red on the wall, and they stop and they go to the next machine. We get them. This is an aerobic endurance. Beginning aerobic endurance class, actually. That's what it's intended to be, not a weight training class. And it's very sustainable. People can do this for a long time, for many years, without wearing out or injuring themselves or just becoming plain fatigued. And so the people, by the time they get out of their orientation, they know exactly what to do when they come to class. They know exactly where to put their machine weights. They don't have to stop and think, well, what am I going to do today? They come in, they log in on the computer, and if they do have questions, I've got fitness staff up there who are very attentive to them, and so they just go do their thing. Speaking of quotes, I have a couple of favorites here. I have one that I've had up in my office for a long time, which says, if you do not take time for your health today, there may not be health for your time tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a really good one. And so I have all these nice little quotes pasted all over. And I've got one up. I've got one by the elevator that says, in the interest of your better health, we invite you to use the stairway to your left.
I love that.
Instead of, and I found that in a Canadian hotel. So I kind of, borrowed it from them. And people like these little quotes because they really hit home. I've got one that says exercise, those who refrain gain, exercise. And I have pictures of people of all ages, including Marilyn Monroe, doing a military press. I have pictures of people all ages in their workout clothing pasted on the walls, and they inspire people. And, there will be a 65-year-old person bicycling right next to an 18-year-old person, and everybody's doing pretty much the same thing, maybe at different levels and for different lengths of time. But it's a real community effort, and everybody starts talking to everybody. It's a wonderful thing. In the morning is when most of the people who are 50 and above come into work, and so we play 50s and 60s music for them.
Yeah.
Then late in the afternoon, when the students wake up, we'll put rock and roll on. So people have to find something that makes them happy while they're exercising, or they won't continue to do it. And so these are just some of the things that we do for them.
Well, that sounds great. And I did some similar things out here in California. It was nice to mix the older people with the younger people, too. What was interesting for me is that some of the older people I had, 65 plus, were more fit and moved better than the kids coming right out of high school. I thought that was kind of educating for me, you know.
Absolutely. And they come to class and they listen to you during the orientations.
Yeah.
and they ask questions. And I will say that the older folks are a little bit confused by technology.
Yeah.
You know, they have a hard time with that. But, you know, technology has an extremely negative impact on the human body.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, it does. And, you know, if we expect, if Americans expect to produce offspring that are going to live long, healthy lives, there are big changes that have to be made. And that change is in keeping active and not sitting all day long and eating the right food.
Which kind of brings us into some of those big points we talked about before the show, a little more on the clinical side. And this is one of the things I wanted you to tap into as a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that you mentioned the other day, a malnourished, obese population, mm-hmm. which is kind of an oxymoron in some ways, mm-hmm. but it's a reality. Can you explain mm-hmm. why we're obese but malnourished?
Well, for one, it's the what we call the SAD, the Standard American Diet, and which I call the brown diet, because everywhere you go and everywhere you look, people are eating brown food. It's hash browns, hamburgers,
processed
French fries,
foods, yeah.
Fried foods, brown foods.
Yeah.
And the malnourishment comes from the fact that the standard American diet is consists of foods that are void or have very little actual vitamins and minerals from fresh whole foods. You know, we eat off the grocery shelves. We eat packaged foods, and it's very profitable for manufacturers to do packaged foods because they don't go bad.
Right.
And
why is that?
Well, it's because of everything that they're preserved with.
Right.
Including hydrogenated oils, and which act as a flavor enhancer, and they act as a preservative, and all of the other preservatives that go into packaged foods.
Which, by the way, I love your email signature that says, please don't hydrogenate me.
Yeah, partially hydrogenate.
Yeah, partially hydrogenate. Yeah, that's great.
Right, right.
You know, I talked to Kevin Rail about something I saw a report on a few months ago that said the morticians today do not have to use as much embalming fluid as they used to because there are so many preservatives in our bodies already. That's a bit of a startling factoid.
It is very startling, and those preservatives are not food. They're not whole foods, and we have to get back into eating whole, fresh foods. And I talked to you about the diabetes level, adult onset diabetes level in Michigan adolescents. The statistic is something like 25,000 of them, of the adolescents between the ages of 8 and 14, have fully diagnosed adult onset diabetes. And in the inner cities, in places like Flint and Saginaw,
mm-hmm.
where number one, it's dangerous to go outside.
Right.
So that's one thing. It's dangerous to go outside. We don't get the sun very much, and when we do, we've been brainwashed to slather ourselves with protective
right, sunblock.
Oils and stuff. And so we're not getting the vitamin D into our skin. And kids are sitting a lot. And so that has produced chubby children with no vitamin D who are and no exercise. And now we've seen a growth of rickets in these inner city children. Because they're in rickets is when you don't have vitamin D, and when your legs bow out, well, these children are too heavy at too young of an age, and their bones can't take it, and so they bow out, and this is a third world disease.
Right. It's something that it sounds like a 1930s or 1940s term, and you mentioned it the other day. I'm like, wow, rickets. You know, I haven't heard about that for a while, and
mm-hmm.
now it's back.
Mm-hmm.
Because of our mm-hmm. lifestyles. You know, there's a medical condition. I can't remember the name of it now, but I worked with a woman whose daughter had this, and it's from morbid obesity when you're developing in adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
And basically,
mm-hmm.
if you look at the leg and the knee joint, there the cartilage shears off of the bone,
mm-hmm.
And it creates an alignment issue in the knee, and it's very, very painful, and they have to surgically go in and realign the leg, and then, of course, it's never the same. But I was just startled to learn about the condition and to know that it's not something that is extremely rare anymore. The sheer weight alone on a child's knee is shearing the cartilage off the joint. The body is not designed to hold that much weight at that age.
Mm-hmm. Well, excess weight on the knee joints is one of the most common ways that or reasons why older folks have to get knee replacements too. You know, it's a known fact, and you know,
you talked about the fatty livers in children with the metabolic testing, and that our organs are rotting basically. Can you touch on that?
Fatty liver disease is something that comes from, believe it or not, there have been studies. This is part of the China study book that Dr. T. Cohen Campbell wrote. Fatty liver disease and liver disease in itself in children comes from eating too much animal protein too young of an age. And it's cow's milk that has been the reason for this, but I'm not going to go into that. 9% of 5-year-olds in this nation, it is suspected to have fatty liver disease, and that's from eating too much saturated fat and not exercising.
That is outrageous. It's a good thing Kevin Rayl's not in the show, because he'd be going ballistic right now.
but that's really
outrageous.
Mm-hmm. Children who are going into their young adulthood, and children and young later adolescents, aged like 19 to 28 right now, are in a horrible state of affairs. They are so obese, and their insides of their bodies, you know, their arteries. Kids are getting high cholesterol and high blood pressure in their teens.
Right.
And they're getting arthrosclerosis in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And it is estimated that this generation is going to start dying of older adult diseases by the time they're in their mid 30s.
What's interesting is we have basically a failed healthcare system, according to some people that are smarter and more higher place than I am, which is a whole another topic for another show. But so many people in America today that are working class, you know, middle class, even educated folks don't have health insurance. Mm-hmm. And so it's even more important today for the people that are younger to take care of their health, because they might be the only ones that are responsible for paying for that, the way things are going, you know?
Right. Well, we've been duped a little bit by the medical profession. Bless their hearts. Doctors are wonderful. Medical science research has been wonderful. You know, we are dying of diseases of affluence, whereas people, for instance, in the rural areas of China, for instance, they're dying of things that we were dying of in the early 1900s, like pneumonia and pertussis. You know, we're dying of affluent diseases, and affluent diseases are chronic diseases that are starting at in the 20s and are causing people to be really, really ill. Diabetes and heart disease, and I could name many of them, but we've also been brainwashed into thinking that the only thing that we can do is to treat these diseases with pills. And, you know,
you mentioned something the other day about, was it lifestyle medications or life?
That's what, I just completed a certification course in plant-based nutrition from Cornell University. Mm-hmm. And several of the lectures were on what we're calling now lifestyle medication, lifestyle medicine. And it is cleansing ourselves, reversing our diseases through what we eat and the activity that we do, and it works. Everybody knows that type 2 diabetes can be reversed by just changing your diet and exercising.
Mm-hmm.
And so now that several people in this nation, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn from the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Joel Furman, he's out of New Jersey, Dr. John McDougall, there's a group of these people who have researched and have documented that heart disease reversal can be done by going on a plant-based diet, eliminating animal products and eliminating oils.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another topic. That's another topic. But let me just take something that's very dear and near to everybody's hearts, and that's the little pill of Viagra. You know, people know what clogged arteries are. They know what clogged coronary arteries are, and they know that coronary arteries, when they get clogged, cause problems. Well, if you've got clogged coronary arteries, you also have clogged arteries in the reproductive area.
Mm-hmm.
And when your area, and when the arteries are clogged, the blood flow can't get through, which is very vital for men and women to have sexual dysfunction.
Mm-hmm.
So what the pharmaceutical companies said, well, let's just give them a little blue pill, which is basically a vasodilator. It opens up the vessels,
mm-hmm.
and so that the men can therefore enjoy a normal sex life. Well, the vessels can be opened up and remain opened up if they would just for 6 months stop eating saturated fats and stop eating so much meat and dairy products. And it's so simple. We do not have to go to the pharmacy and get a pill for everything, because the pill is not curing the problem.
Right. You
it's
know, just back
taking
in the,
care of the symptom.
Back in the day, that wasn't an issue when I was growing up in the 60s. I mean, people didn't talk about it, but it just wasn't that big of a deal. But let's talk about the duping of America with the with the commercials for the sexual dysfunction medications.
Mm-hmm.
They've always got this studly looking guy in the early 50s, you know, physically fit that can't get an erection. I always thought that was funny, you know. And they never show the morbidly obese person that doesn't have arteries that function properly. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's quite ironic that physically fit men can have clogged arteries as well.
Well, that's a good point, though.
They can. And
it's not just what you look like. It's what's inside.
It's not just what you look like.
Which it goes back to the organs rotting thing. You know.
Right. Well, people, Dr. McDougall said in one of his lectures, and I'm paraphrasing him, but he said, you know, people don't die of high glucose. They don't die of high blood pressure, and they don't die of high cholesterol. They die of rotten arteries, which are produced over years of having high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and high glucose.
Hmm.
And it's so much not a theory anymore. We know for a fact that by going on plant-based diets, you can fix the insides of your body. Now, I do want to spend a couple of minutes on the horrific change that the public schools have made in eliminating daily physical activity. It's the worst possible thing that we could
that we
could do, and children need to have physical activity in the public schools. Was designed and put into the curriculum so that it would be a lifelong experience or lifelong learning for them, just like math and English and social studies.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn when you're a child. You get into the habit of moving and breathing heavily and sweating a little bit and having hunger pangs because you haven't eaten for 3 or 4 hours and you've been exercised. And it is a tragedy that what we are doing with these young children, only giving them, you know, 3 or 4 half-hour sessions a week. And now, I don't know if you've heard about this book called, it's called Sparks.
Yes, I have heard of it. Yes.
Yep, and it is The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been this wonderful knowledge now that we have that muscle movement causes a reaction. Muscle movement produces a chemical, and the chemical is called BDNF. Well, the muscle movement causes a reaction, which then causes another reaction, okay, a metabolic reaction,
mm-hmm.
and a chemical called BDNF, which is deprived. It's called BDNF, and it acts as like a miracle grow in the brain cells.
Yes, I've heard that before.
Yes, and brains that are deprived of this of this neurotransmitter fail to thrive. They fail. They shut down to learning new information.
My feeling is, you know, we've got a lot of clinical depression dependency on psychotropic drugs in this country, and I've got a theory that it's related directly to a lack of physical movement. As people sit, they don't get that chemical reaction in the brain, and their mood decreases. And there are all kinds of research studies now showing the benefits of physical movement with mood enhancement and just feeling better, you know, mentally.
Right. Well, physical aerobic activity is the fastest that we know of. It's the fastest way to change moods. It raises serotonin levels. It works faster than any drug that we take to raise our serotonin levels. And I tell my students, I tell my colleagues, if they're feeling sluggish, go outside and take a brisk 10-minute walk, and I guarantee them that they will feel better because it raises the blood sugar, and then these good things cross the blood-brain barrier and raise the serotonin levels. And it's all brain chemicals. You know, our moods are all brain chemicals, and if we're not putting in the right food. For instance, the human brain needs about 500 calories of glucose a day to
mm-hmm.
function.
Mm-hmm.
500 calories. And the glucose comes from carbohydrates. And but it's not the carbohydrate that is sugar in a 12-ounce can of pop. It's the carbohydrate that's the whole food that has, you know, the vegetables and the fruits, and that it's a complex carbohydrate that lasts longer in the system and allows the brain to function like it's supposed to. And when I said that we're malnourished because we're not getting those right kinds of colorful foods and vitamins and minerals, and the people's brains are becoming sluggish.
Did you ever see that cable special on the morbidly obese that was running the last year or two? Were they?
I don't think so.
Oh, it was fascinating. Mm-hmm. They had, I mean, morbidly obese people. So we're talking about people 600-800 pounds, right? And
uh-huh.
and they would put a table out with all the food that these people were consuming in one day. And
uh-huh.
it was amazing how much volume was there. But what
uh-huh.
was really interesting is what you said. Everything
uh-huh.
was brown or earth tone.
Uh-huh.
There was
uh-huh.
no color whatsoever. There were no bright berries and
mm-hmm.
bright carrots and deep green leafy vegetables. It was all basically processed food
mm-hmm.
and bread type things.
Mm-hmm.
So the color of your food, I'm a stupid, simple guy. I like to keep it really, as Kevin would say, a second grade mentality, because I think people will, you know, actually pick up on something when it's broken down, and just putting more color on your plate is a good step in the right direction.
Well, all those colors represent antioxidants as well.
Right.
And, you know, plants don't get cancer. They've got a built-in fortress. And when those antioxidants go into our systems, you know, we get cancer. We are bombarded with cancer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we never know when it's actually in our system. But they've also proven now that by eating a plant-based diet with all these colorful foods in it prevents the... Once the cancer virus or the carcinogen gets into the system, and it goes right to our DNA and cross-links the DNA and breaks down the DNA so that it grow its tumors. A plant-based diet prevents that tumor growth.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done it. They've done it in mice, and they've given them carcinogens. They gave us one. The control group, very, very, very little antioxidant. They gave the other group a lot of antioxidant, and the tumor growth stopped in the groups that had the most antioxidants. And there's also a protein factor there, but I won't go into that.
Well, we'll touch on that in a minute. But I want to recap mm-hmm. this and just state it in a different way. So, you know, when we talk about a malnourished, obese population.
Oh. Yes.
People are eating a lot of food that doesn't have a lot of nutritional value, but it has a lot of caloric density, or it's high in calories but not high in vitamins and minerals. So that's the point,
yep,
basically.
It's calorie dense and nutrient lacking.
And bankrupt, yes. And
mm-hmm.
we can't touch on the protein, because this is something that I have read before and you mentioned it again yesterday. But basically, you know, and I do corporate wellness, as you know, and I also work with... some students at the collegiate level in football, and I'm constantly reminding people that we consume way too much protein in this country. Mm-hmm. The supplements, especially with the young guys playing football, and just the reliance on meat. But you know, mm-hmm. it creates a pH problem. So mm-hmm. we've got a high protein diet, and that acidic value is buffered by the calcium, which mm-hmm. then pulls calcium out of the bones. And I'd like you to elaborate a little bit about how we drink all this milk and mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. take all these calcium supplements, and we have the most amount of bone density problems of any developed country.
That's true. Americans consume more calcium than any other country, and we have more osteoporosis, and our osteoporosis levels are steadily climbing. Even with all of the advertisements that the Milk Council and the Egg Council and the Meat Council tell us about getting our calcium from cheese and milk, well, yes, cheese and milk have calcium because they come from a cow, and the cow eats the plants, and the calcium comes from the ground because it's a mineral. And the more cheese and meat and dairy products that we're eating, thinking we're putting calcium in our system, the more osteoporosis we're getting, because this acid level, the amino acids in the protein, is too much for the human body. And so the body has to keep that very delicate pH balance. And the best way and easiest to do it is take it from our bones. And so, that's one thing wrong with eating too much protein, especially animal protein.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad for the kidneys. A diet rich in protein is very, very hard on the kidneys. And people are, you know, kidney disease will certainly come to people who have started, you know, maybe people who are in their 50s now probably, who started eating meat a long time ago and have meat with every meal.
And another thing is, the now we roll in the sedentary technology driven lifestyle where mm-hmm. basically the people I work with every day and even myself, you know, we're at the computer 9 to 12 hours a day, then we're driving, and then mm-hmm. you know, we go back home and sit down a little bit, and then that's this whole, like, a minimum of 30 minutes a day of physical activity is so important, just from a bone loading standpoint. You know,
just
load the bones with some stress, healthy stress, in a good way, to mm-hmm. help retain some of that density. Because if you've ever been around anyone that has osteoporosis, it's a really difficult problem to negotiate. You know, I've been around a lady whose spine basically just disintegrated, and
mm-hmm.
it was sad, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another thing about children and their physical activity. Children need to jump in their, from the time that they're able to walk in till about their late teens. They have to do jumping exercises. You mm-hmm. know, we used to skip rope and do hopscotch and jump all over the place. And children who are not jumping and who are not getting this activity are not growing strong bones. And so they've got a double whammy that they're going to be dealing with. Their bones aren't developing properly in the first place.
Right.
Plus, their bodies are being invaded by a lot of meat protein, and that's leaching what calcium and what health there is from their bones. So
yeah, there are numerous catastrophic issues here, which, you know, hence, you know, what we're trying to do in Lean Berets is raise awareness for that. And there are other groups out there too. There's some great stuff going on. But I tell you, if it's not now, when? That's what I keep telling people.
If not now, when?
Because the luxury of time is over, people. We've got to get moving, and we got to kick some butt and do it quickly.
Mm-hmm. People are complaining about health insurance now. Well, an acquaintance of mine from Lansing, he's a pediatric endocrinologist, mm-hmm. and he told me 5 or 6 years ago that if nothing is done in 25 years to end this of diabetes in children, there will not be enough pediatric endocrinologists to deal with end-life liver disease in these children and who will be young adults.
Well, that reminds me of what I told you yesterday when I heard Newt Gingrich speak the Health Policy Reform Conference in Washington, D.C. a few years ago. He said we're uninsurable as a nation, and mm-hmm. it's because the system was never designed to insure so many people refusing to take personal responsibility for their own health care, meaning mm-hmm. we can't mm-hmm. build enough hospitals, we can't have enough endocrinologists, we can't make enough medication to deal with that many sick and diseased people.
Yeah, it's going to get very, very serious. And you and I also spoke about the new requirements or standards for new recruits in the military. That I heard something on the radio that 35,000 recruits failed their basic first test because they're just in such poor health and
Right.
And I don't know about you and the rest of these folks out there listening, but I want a military that is strong.
Yes.
And I can do what they're supposed to do, because as much as we hate to talk about war and having to protect our nation, it's our way of life, and we need a strong, fit military.
One of my fitness friends from Z Health is a Army recruiter, and he told me that when he goes into high schools in the Midwest, 70% of the kids that he talks to and addresses aren't recruitable.
Okay.
Because they're not healthy and fit enough to do it. Or they have, you know, some other issues too. But basically 70%, they can't even really talk to seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. It's
so here we are, and to wrap the show up on a positive note, at the Lean Berets, we keep it simple. We have our 30-30 coming up for New Year's, which is 30 days of exercise in a row, at least 30 minutes a day. It's a very simple way to engage people and get them moving. We don't really care what people do as long as they just move, as Lelaine would say.
Mm-hmm.
And, you're doing the wonderful things there in Michigan to just get people moving and have fun and get them at least thinking about the chemicals in the food and the way we can prevent the diseases in the first place, just based on what we're eating,
and
moving.
Our paradigm needs to change from fixing the chronic disease into prevention. The paradigm has got to change to prevention. And if it doesn't, then it's not going to work. I do want to say one thing also about kids and physical fitness.
Mm-hmm.
Kids with the fittest bodies have the fittest brains.
Yes, absolutely.
We know that.
Yes.
We know that. And so, everybody kind of moans and groans a little bit about the Americans not passing tests like they should, and then we're not good in math, and Asians are overtaking us in terms of, what they do and how smart their children are.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that we have to seriously think about and start hounding our people in a government. We have got to get physical education back into the schools. They take better tests. They learn better. They concentrate better. It's a known fact. So what do? We take it. We take physical education away from them, and we feed them peanut butter that has hydrogenated oil in it, and Caesar salads, and pizza.
Yeah, this is a great point, and a good way to kind of wrap up the show today is to talk about the physical culture. And so the kids today aren't really being taught the physical culture, which in modern terms would be, a wellness lifestyle. But 100 years ago, physical culture was a huge concept and movement across America. And I've been talking to some of my fitness friends about some of the shifts we're starting to see in physical education. And one of my buddies, Army McGuire, who he's an Indian Club guy, and he's got a bunch of stuff going on that end. We were talking about this the other day. And what's starting to happen because of decreased budgets, they're cutting the sport programs. But that might be a window of opportunity to get the physical culture back in that necessarily is not related to sports. In other words, we're working on our kids on general health and fitness, not necessarily working on them to be a better football player or basketball player or baseball player. And I really think that's part of the solution, not part of the problem. On the surface, it looks like it's a problem. But I think this is a window of opportunity to get simple tools back in the school. I'll give you a few examples. The Endo Board was created out here, or it's headquartered out here in California. A lot of the surfers and skiers use it. It's a platform with a roller or a disc underneath of it, and they use it for balance training and different things like that. And they're taking it into schools, and it's going nationwide. They've developed a curriculum, and the PE teachers are loving it because it gets the extreme sport kids kind of involved that aren't interested at all in baseball, football, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to a show the other day on the sandbag training, and the sandbags are coming back into the school because they're simple tools that people can use for overall fitness. And then the Indian clubs, I mean, they were in just about all the schools 100 years ago, and the gymnasiums, and Teddy Roosevelt talked about using Indian clubs, and the Indian clubs were in our military academies. And then when the organized sport programs came into the schools, the fitness type tools went out. And I think now is a time to make that shift again and reverse it and go back and let's look at the basic fundamental elements of health, you know, existence, which is we got to get our kids healthy. If they're healthy and they move well, they can be a great football player or a better football player. But first things first, let's keep it simple and let's see what we can do to save what's left of America.
Yes, and as Richard Simmons, his campaign is to leave no child left on his behind.
I love that. I love that guy, man.
Yeah, because we you know, we certainly focus on the elite athletes and leave three quarters of the students, you know, to be bored in their gym class, you know, one semester out of 4 years that they have to take in Petoskey. And yeah, so
there needs to be a paradigm shift. I'm a credentialed physical education teacher as well.
Oh, okay.
And so I can speak, you know, from the inside on this. There needs to be a paradigm shift in PE curriculum as well. Because of throwing the ball out and all that stuff, that's not going to work. We need physical education instructors that understand wellness, and they're modeling that on their own, and they're engaged with the prevention part of this. And so, there are some out there, but there are far too many that are lazy, and they need to go to the Lean Braze firing squad, you know,
because it's
time to move some people out and get some fresh people in there that are going to throw down and be part of the solution, not part of the problem. So
and not having a budget is not an excuse, because you don't need to spend a lot of money on fancy physical workout equipment.
No, I got an opportunity to do a grant program for Kaiser Permanente and the Boys and Girls Club in California a few years ago for obesity prevention. I spent $1,500 at four pilot schools, actually three schools and then the Boys and Girls Club in the inner city. And I brought in all the stuff I was using for collegiate football, but I took the competitive edge out of it and I just made it fun. The heaviest kids, the most obese kids that had never had any kind of success with physical movement, they had all the self-esteem issues. We could talk about that for 2 weeks. They were the biggest proponents of the program because of the social psychology shift that I put into, you know, making it participation-based, making it fun. And really, you had to be creative with taking all the competition out of it. It's where we are today, and we need to make those kinds of changes. And they loved it. They would engage completely, and there was no judgment in terms of, you know, what they could not do. And then they would do things on the weekends and come back and tell us on Monday what they were doing over the weekend to try to encourage their families to be more physically active. And for the most part, these are inner city kids as well. So I think you give the obese kids the right opportunity and they will engage and get off their butt and kind of what Richard Simmons was talking about. But do you have anything else you want to say as we close here?
Well, just that, I think we have to kind of do this one family at a time. You know, if you could get one person in a family to get the message and then spread it around the family. But we can't sit by passively and just let this keep going. Those of us who know, we have a responsibility to the future adults of America. These children are vulnerable and they're innocent. They eat what they're given. And we've got to be commandos.
Yeah, I love that. And here's a challenge to the adults: if we don't rise up and do something now, these kids are going to curse us for decades.
Because
something that I got some national media on attention on before people were actually saying it is that child obesity is child abuse. So it's not the kids that are driving to McDonald's. It's the parents giving into it, and they are really hurting their children. And so it's a paradigm shift again. But I want to thank you. This has been Maggie Daniels from North Central Michigan College. She's a registered nurse out there. Thank you for sharing not just the really cool, fun stuff. We're talking about a few of the problems from the clinical end and how we can make those paradigm shifts. I really appreciate your input today.
Well, you're most welcome. I told one instructor from my Cornell class that I was going to spend the rest of my life finding a podium.
Well, you got a little podium here, and we can do more. This is just the first show. So.
Okay, I will send you. I've got books. I've got some wonderful books for people to read that really put this into perspective, and I'll put those on the website for you.
Yeah, send me the links and on your page. I will hook those up for you and anything else that you want. So hang on after we close out here. This has been Maggie Daniels with Ron Jones and Lean Brace. You've been listening to the Lean Brace radio show at theleanbrace.com. Metal Blues today provided by Stanley J. Tucker and Calcaneus. Until next time, keep rocking health and fitness, America.